Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, Husker fans. This is the Pick Six Podcast after actual win by the football team and the volleyball team and a draw by the soccer team and so on and so forth. Hello, everybody. I'm Sam McCune along with Tom Chattel and Evan Bland. We're here on a Wednesday. It's midweek. Nebraska beat Northern Illinois 35-11. We have a quarterback competition, perhaps a controversy. Evan's going to be the third-string running back this week for Nebraska. they would make me the sixth-string wide receiver, but I'm a little slow, and I'm a little porky for that role. Nebraska offense is in trouble, but they're going to try to figure it out. The Nebraska defense is flying high, and Tom's going to talk a little bit about his conversation with defensive coordinator Tony White. He's going to be writing a column later this week. Nebraska volleyball is 9-0, the number two team in the country. Number one is their nemesis, Wisconsin. They will meet in a month from basically today in terms of days, not in terms of days. But Nebraska and Wisconsin, number one and number two, each is 9-0, Big Ten starts. We got a men's basketball schedule, and just 10 minutes ago, we got a baseball schedule. We're going to talk about all four of those things. I want to remind everybody to subscribe to the Omaha World Herald. It is September 20th, so if you were to get the Omaha World Herald for 6 months, that's $1 for 6 months. That's going to take you all the way through March 20th. That's going to be through Nebraska basketball's first NCAA tournament win in history. So I'm sure that'll happen. And the Nebraska women's basketball team might be in the NCAA tournament as well. And so this will take you all the way through there. If you're a Jasker and you're listening to this because you like Nebraska football, but also like Creighton basketball, this will take you all the way to the Sweet 16. Of Creighton basketball season. So be sure to subscribe to the Omaha World Herald at www.omaha.com/subscribe. Okay, plug over. Let's go right to football. Nebraska's 1-2. They play Louisiana Tech this week. The opponent is not really the story, even though I think the opponent is about as good as the team they played last week, to be honest with you. The opponent isn't the story. Nebraska is. They have a quarterback competition. They have a quarterback question mark. They have two running backs that lost their seasons to injury. We were shocked. I think shock is the right word, Evan, for how we responded when we heard that.
Yes.
None of us expected it. We hadn't heard it through the grapevine. I thought when he said injuries, he was going to say, you know, Ramir Johnson maybe out for a little while, but I didn't think Gabe Irvin was coming, and I thought he might say Cam Lenhart was really hurt. But when we heard loss for the season, I think we were like, well, okay. And then the wide receiver issue is what it is. We will start here, and we'll start with Tom. You wrote about Heinrich Harburg's performance in Saturday's game, the Kearney kid, the kid from Kearney. A lot of people have latched onto that. It's a cool story. There's a photo out there of him and T.O. This feels like a little bit of a moment, right? But there's also this sense of the starters over here waiting in the wings, the former starter who got hurt but also didn't play well. This feels interesting this week.
Yeah, as in who's going to start. I still think it'll be Sims if he can play. I think they'll lean back on he's our guy. We still think he's the best guy. And he got hurt and so on and so forth. But now, boy, he's got a short leash. And they don't have to play a guy who turns it over three or four times a game. If have you always felt like, well, do they have to play him because they don't have anybody else? And I confess I did not think Harburg would be a starter in the Big Ten, but he sure looked like one last week. You know, that was one game. But he made plays. What I liked about him was everything was fast, and he got the ball out, and he wasn't overthinking anything. They drew up plays that I think were to his advantage. Used his ability to run and go outside a little bit. But I just I think it's still Sims' team until, you know, but it's just going to be interesting to watch that develop. It's still really early. We only played three games. So, and there's a bye week in there after Illinois. I mean, I think, you know, could there be sort of a mid-season changing of guard thing maybe? You know, just something to keep an eye on. But maybe this will help Sims I control the turnover. As long as the guy behind me is right on my tail, I better clean it up. So, but boy, yeah, the running back news it sure puts focus on the quarterbacks now.
It does.
They have to be better than ever. I gotta be cleaner than ever. So, but yeah, what a fun story. And all that stuff came out after the game. It was late. It wasn't a lot of time to really enjoy. I think Sunday people thought, oh, this guy is – he posed with Osborne. He's one of us. His dad played, all that stuff. So, yeah, I think it's an interesting wrinkle. But the running back thing kind of threw some water on all that.
Yeah, it did. I mean, I'm with you, Sam. Like, Gabe Irvin talked after the game, and he said he was okay, I believe, in the hall.
He did.
And
he said he was fine.
And, you know, Ramir Johnson, I kind of felt the same way. Maybe he'd miss a little bit of time, but not a season-ending sort of deal. So now you're talking Anthony Grant, as Matt Rhule said. It's his show now. It was his show last year. It's his show again. Emmett Johnson, who they've always liked, but has been kind of buried at that depth chart. Now he's elevated. Quentin Ives.
They like Quentin Ives a lot.
Yeah.
Just don't know if he's ready, but they like him.
Well, he's got to be ready.
Yeah.
And maybe this will open up a door to, I mean, maybe something really good will happen because of this now. You don't know. You know, this was, I hate to harp on this, this was never going to be the big year. This was the year of the transition, the building the culture. So, you know, to me, 6-6 is a longer shot than maybe it was with those injuries. But maybe somebody emerges, right? Maybe Harburg becomes the guy we didn't know. And maybe one of these running backs steps up and by the, you know, going into those November games, this is a different look. I don't know.
No, I for sure. I mean, I think that's a good point. Back to your point about Sims. Okay, so if you were thinking of a game where you're like, let's get the starter back in there and let's give him a chance at success. Saturday is that game. Louisiana Tech's defense is one of the worst in college football. They haven't played great teams up to this point. They played North Texas, SMU, who else? Florida International and Northwestern State, Dave mm-hmm. Anhorn's former school. So they haven't played a lot of great teams. They've given up a lot of yards. If you're going to find a game where Sims could have a get-right game, this is it.
Yep.
If he's not 100% and Harburg has another good game Saturday, then you go into Michigan and nobody's getting right there. You're just trying to survive against Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So it does become like a, okay, if we don't get him back in this game on Saturday, it would be hard to say, all right, Jeff, go out there and beat Michigan. You know, like that's hard. That's a hard thing to ask of, by the way, a defense that's giving up 5 points a game. They're the number one scoring defense, and I think the number one total defense in the country. And so you can't envision a situation where a guy that's been out for 2 weeks, rusty, comes back in and says, all right, we're going to get it going. I mean, that's hard. So that's what I'm thinking about. I'm always thinking about how are you going to, you know, can you win this weekend? Well, sure, they're going to focus all their energy on winning because they need every win possible. But then you're thinking, okay, how do we go into the following week? And we'll get to this point now. And we'll get back to the wide receivers in a second. Nebraska has a defense that, in theory, could keep it in every game, including Michigan. If you've got that kind of defense, you have a chance. How has that defense maybe changed our opinion about this season already?
A lot, because we didn't. I mean, you know, I think you two thought before the season it was going to be a good defense. It was going to help. It was going to be there. But I don't think we even any of us thought it would be like
That's
this.
Right. Sure.
Where it it can control the game. I mean, it can get other offenses off the field at 1-2-3. But I didn't realize until yesterday. It's not like a no-name defense, but there aren't a lot of like stars.
That's right.
And so, you know, I didn't realize until yesterday at the Tony White press conference that they've been using so many players. They've actually been bringing guys who have been running in off the scout team, and guys who've been working their way up, and they've earned plays, so they play them, and that's a different look for Nebraska football. They don't, I mean, not since way back when, have they really emptied the bench, and the guys were as good. So
so you used to play 70 snaps a game.
That's a heck of a
field.
That's a really cool deal, and if you can get the starters to still buy in when they're not playing as much, I really think Tony White is a potential star coordinator. I mean, he's got that look. I happened to talk to him yesterday. You know, I always have a San Diego angle, so I know he was at San Diego State for a while, so I wanted to talk to him about San Diego stuff, and we talked for a while about that kind of stuff. But then we talked about tackling. Why is tackling so much better? Very simple explanation that I'll write about later this week, but it has to do with tackling in practice. And he noticed that they were tagging off last year. We were watching old tape from last year. They were just away and would let guys run right by him. He noticed that, and that changed. That's changed a lot.
Yeah.
You watch these guys hit, they hit now. They wrap up. And it reminded me of the first time I saw Bob Stoops' Oklahoma's teams. They just tackled differently. They out on the perimeter, if you threw one of those screens, you weren't getting 5 yards. You were getting nothing. Right. And I love that. And so but he also talked about scheme, and I said, you know, I don't really buy my – I'm not a scheme guy. I'm not an X and O. I mean, all that stuff's over my head anyway. But I said I believe in talent and effort and the technique. And he talked a lot about that. And he agrees that a lot of this 3-3-5 stuff is overrated. But I do think it gives them a good angle. It gives them a good approach to keep people off balance. Opponents don't know – where it's going to be, they're going to be lined up, or how they're going to go after people. So, overall, it's just a good, solid defense right now. But I like Rule's approach. There's a long way to go. There's a lot more out there. They got to get turnovers, and they can be a lot better, and they're going to have to be a lot better.
18 guys have 50 or more snaps. 23 have 25 or more snaps. Two of the games where Nebraska was behind, or it was in a tight game, and then last week it was 14-3 with about 3 minutes left in the third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a, hey, we're playing guys because we're blowing teams out. This isn't Georgia. Right. This is legitimately, they have nine guys that have 100 snaps.
30 have seen double-digit snaps on
defense.
It's
unbelievable. I don't think we've ever, I mean, we probably saw this in the 90s, but it's because they were ahead 63-0.
Right.
They had the chance to play guys. This seems really rare to me. I mean, Sue never came off the field when he played for Bo. He pretty much was on there all the time. Levante David never came off the field. These guys are coming off the field. And now maybe if they had Levante David would stay on the field. But they don't, granted. But these guys are coming off the field. The only two that really aren't are Singleton and Newsom. Mm-hmm. They're pretty much not. And Omar Brown and Isaac Gifford. Those four kind of stay on the field all the time. They don't have as much depth in the secondary or depth that they trust. Javon Wright is listed as a safety for Pro Football Focus, but he's not playing safety. He's playing linebacker.
Right.
So it's been really, really good. No question about the tackling. Tackling's been awesome. I love the way they hustle. They run to the ball. And there was a drive in the it was in the fourth quarter where on first down, it was a false start. And then on first and 15, Nebraska knows what they're going to do before the guy for Northern Illinois even motions to the wide side of the field. They got two guys loaded over there because they know Rocky Lombardi is going to roll out before the guy motions. He motions. Rocky Lombardi rolls out. and they're on top of him. He can't do anything. Second play is a little screen off to the left. Reimer misses a tackle. He did miss it. There's six guys there to make the play. Before, in recent years, Reimer misses a tackle, it's going to go for 10. Absolutely. Because there's not going to be anybody else. So that play went for 3. And then on third down, Newsom makes that great play, you know, with knocking the ball away on the third down. It was 3 very different kind of plays. One shows know-how, one shows hustle, one shows skill. And I'm like, this defense is playing at a level that I have not seen at Nebraska since maybe the Randy Gregory year. And that was because they had great players. I mean, Randy Gregory, they don't have Randy Gregory on their team. So that defense in 2013 had better players than this one. This one, I think, is just really well coordinated. And they seem to, they just all seem in sync. It's really impressive. And I mean, Tony White just, I was saying this before the podcast, he reminds me of a 90s Husker, but he didn't have that, like, he didn't win national titles in his, so he's a coach.
Yeah.
Like, he invests, you know what I mean? Like, he didn't experience all the glory as a player.
But yeah, I like this phrase about everything. He uses the phrase on the grass a lot, like on the field, but he calls it the grass. He sounds like a ball coach. You know what I mean? He's just, I think the guy is worth studying a little bit more, you know, listening to a little bit more just to find out what's going on there. But the defense, when they play, Evan, they really, it's the kind of thing where you, there's sort of a confidence there. And I think they kind of build off each other a little bit, and everybody's involved, and they all want to be there. You know what I mean? They all want to be on like every play.
Well, it's kind of, I mean, it's just after what we've, and like the 21 defense for you know, just for saying it, like the 21 defense had its moments where it was pretty good, but they didn't have the depth and they didn't have the consistency where it felt like pretty much any open space situation, Nebraska's made the tackle this year. They've taken guys down hard. And the other thing that the defense, like you asked Sam, how the defense sort of its rise has adjusted our expectations. I think it affects the quarterback decision quite a bit too, because if you thought going into the year that the defense was going to be so-so, then you need a guy, a big play, maybe big bust guy like Sims out there to generate those points, because you're going to have to keep up. But if you have a defense that continues at the rate that this one does, then suddenly you can start to say, there's a little bit more value on ball security than there is on the big play and generating points. We can play the field position game. We can, you know, if we can put together 2 touchdown drives and maybe get a takeaway somewhere else, like that's the recipe for winning games. So yeah. I think that the rise of the defense has to factor into your decision at quarterback as well.
I agree. And I think that you look at it the other way too, that, okay, if we have a guy who turns it over, our defense will clean it up. But as we've seen, that doesn't work. And if the defense can only do so much, if you keep putting it out there in a tough situations, it's not going to hold up. It's going to give up points eventually. So I think that's a good point.
Back to the offense. So obviously the running back situation falls to Anthony Grant. He's done this before. He accounted for 70% of the running back snaps last year. Anthony Grant, in my opinion, is one of the best athletes on the team. I think he's the best natural runner. So I think they'll be able to survive this based on that. I think if it were Anthony Grant and Gabe Irvin getting hurt and you're dealing with Ramir Johnson, who gets banged up easily, this is like his 4th injury, Emmett Johnson and Quentin Ives, it's a little more concerning. But I think Grant can get it done. I think he can remain durable. I know they like Ives a lot. It's really not a question of the ability. It's a question, and his athleticism is off the charts. He was a great basketball player in high school. His vertical is insane. They love him. I think his game is at this point somewhat similar to Maurice Washington. You know, he can bounce runs to the outside. They want to bulk him up and have him be a downhill runner, but I think he's got some natural skill sets. So we'll see what happens with him. Emmett Johnson, I'm curious about. He's a little slight. He reminds me of a slightly taller version of J.D. Spielman, and Spielman moved to receiver. They had very similar high school careers as well. At wide receiver, to me, A, this is the harder position to play. B, and you can see Satterfield saying it. He knows in his mind, we cannot run the ball 47 times a game and win a bunch in the Big Ten. At some point, these teams are going to be like, we can stop your run game. Throw it. And they've got to find a way to throw the ball. And the lack of receivers makes it really, really hard.
I think he, and to your point, like he said it that way too. He's, the way he says it is, all we have three quarterbacks who can throw. He doesn't talk about the receivers getting open. And you look at, just look at the numbers. I mean, they're attempting 21 passes a game. Mm. You're only three schools at the FBS level that are throwing fewer times a game, and they're all military service option running teams. It's like, that's where Nebraska's at. And so, like, Satterfield, that's what he said. You're going to have to throw the ball downfield to win games. But what do you do? Like, do you assume that Billy Kemp and Thomas Fedoni are going to continue to improve and find a way to get open? Do you throw out your freshman class, Malachi Coleman and Jaden Doss or Jalen Lloyd or whoever it might be? Do you throw them out there and just see what happens? It's not ideal, but like that's kind of, I think, where it's getting to is like, see who can play. And Louisiana Tech this week is like the game that you do that. You're not going to throw a bunch of stuff at the wall against Michigan. You're going to have to do that this week. So, like, I think it sets
it
up
might
a
get
really.
Plays against Michigan.
It sets
I'm
up a
kidding.
Really fascinating week where, like, yeah. I think Nebraska could try all kinds of stuff with all kinds of people this week, and you try to figure out who's ready to help you win games when you go into Big Ten play next week.
Here's what we haven't seen so far. We have not seen Billy Kemp in the Wandale Robinson role of you're going to catch the ball on a little screen and we're going to let you do something. Or we're going to give you the ball out of the backfield and we're going to let you run. Billy Kemp is 5'9 and 185 pounds. Maybe he's more than that. He's not Samari Toure.
No.
And he's not Trey Palmer. And the two things that Trey Palmer and Samari Toure, both in the NFL, both I think caught touchdowns in the first week of their NFL seasons. Both of them could run those cross-country routes. Where, you know, Trey could go from one side of the field all the way to the other. So would Samari. Samari was actually better at it than Trey was. Well, they're both six. You know, Samari was 6'1", Trey's 6 foot. This is not that guy. This is their, you know, their lead receiver, but he is a Wandale Robinson. You put him in the slot and you let him cook, so to speak. They got to throw him the ball, though, short. They've got to get him the ball and let him kind of do some things. Otherwise, asking him to run 25 yards downfield, unless you're Tyreek Hill speed, you're really hard to do at that height, and Tyreek Hill is like 5'10". And so their challenge that they have is finding a way to get him the ball without running screen passes, which they haven't done much of, and then finding a way to get Marcus Washington or Alex Bullock behind the defense. And I wouldn't describe either one of those guys as speedsters. I like Washington a lot. I think he's a good physical receiver. I wouldn't describe him as a guy that gets behind a defense a lot. It's a challenge for him. Because if you can't back a defense off, it's hard to run. You know, you can do it with an option offense, but it's just hard. It's challenging.
Yeah. It's not an explosive play offense. It's not going to be. So you got to pick your spots. And I just, you know, they threw the receiver screen to Alex Bullock. You know, what if Kemp was in on that? You know, they throw him the ball, and then you let him go. I mean, maybe he's a little faster. He gets down there quicker. There's more yards. But it's just – it's kind of where they are. And, you know, maybe by the end of the season, they'll be, you know, maybe you'll see Coleman out there. You know, maybe there will be some different plays they can run. But they don't have him right now.
When Xavier Best was a freshman, he played quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of ums here, just like Matt Rhule. I think Betts physically was the most gifted receiver Nebraska's had in a long time. I think Malachi Coleman can be that, but I wouldn't put him in the same as Betts. And so Betts played a lot. Wandale played a lot. Wandale was a unique player who was very smart and very skilled and all these other things. So I just don't think it's easy to put freshmen on the field. Jalen Lloyd hasn't played since the first game. Malachi Coleman's played in all three games, but he hasn't had pass thrown his way. All the other freshman receivers haven't played. Demetrius Bell's not available. Jamiah Charles. Who's the other one? DeAndre Barnes.
You say Doss?
Doss is hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's banged up. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll get to the picks in a minute, and we'll talk about whether we think Nebraska, how many points Nebraska will beat Louisiana Tech by. But let's go to volleyball real quick. They're 9-0. I don't know that there's a ton here to touch on. I know you talked to John Cook about his team. First time they've been 9-0 in a while, unblemished in non-conference play. They have the best defense in the country. They have a top 10 offense, which is actually uncommon for Nebraska in recent years. They've struggled offensively because they've been so good defensively. They have the offense now. Andy Jackson is probably the most explosive middle blocker in the country. We don't talk about her a lot. Merritt Beeson might be the best right side hitter in the country.
She's so good.
She's really good. And apparently they screwed with her arm motion earlier this year, and then she changed it back. And I would say she is the best player on the team. But we'll see if Harper Murray eclipses her. And then you got the quarterback, Bergen Riley. Tom, you talked to John Cook on Wednesday and or Tuesday, and he made an interesting comment about the nature of this team. Remember, he's won 4 national titles, but he said to you what?
Yeah, I, and my approach to him was, this team just feels like there's something about it. And I don't know if it's, I'm not saying they're going to win the national championship, but everything about them is just sort of off the charts. The stadium match and how they handled that, they were part of that. Their history, all these young players handled it so well. And then they go to Stanford and they just sort of transform in front of your eyes from maybe a top 10 contender of maybe a Final Four to this team might be able to do the whole thing. By the end of the match, they played so well, they took Stanford's best shot, and the fourth set that they came back swinging, and but also that ridiculous long rally against Kentucky. I mean, it just feels like the things that are off the charts, kind of just over the top, crazy good, happen with this team. And I can't wait to see what's next. I mean, they're going into the Big Ten, the road. But it just feels like you said, they have the middle taken care of. They've got great hitters on the outsides. I felt like at the end of last year, they just kind of wore down a little bit. They had the older players, the COVID players.
Totally agree.
The Kenzie Knuckles injury hurts right before the Wisconsin match. But there's a freshness to this team, and Cook agreed with me on that. He said there is something different about them. He said all they want to do is they want to hang out around me. He said they follow me around. They hang out in my office. They just want to I shoot the breeze and I'll get all my stuff on the walls and hang out and talk. He said he went on the sidelines for the football game last Saturday night. They were all hanging around him, wanting to take photos. And that was really interesting. We talked about the stadium match and how they handled it. And he said he showed them video of the Bud Crawford fight. But not the fight itself, but it showed video of them every day of Bud walking into the ring with Eminem.
Yeah.
The music and how he carried himself. And this is your moment. This is this is it. And he noticed Crawford was just taking it all in, soak the moment, soak in. And it was the biggest fight of his life. And he challenged the players to do the same thing in the stadium match. I feel like they're doing that every match. I feel like this is a sort of a Bud Crawford mentality. This team has they're kind of ruthless. They'll take your punch and they'll come back later and be a lot stronger. So it's just like it's a team to watch. It's got something about it you can't put your finger on, but they do things that are kind of over the top. Everything is. Okay, what's next?
I think that's really insightful. They've gotten really – I think that this recruiting class really fit their culture. Harper Murray and Bergen Riley are two players who have been in volleyball not only their whole lives but have older sisters who play college volleyball. And so I think there's a little bit of an older beyond their years mentality to the two of them because they've watched their older sister do it. Andy Jackson is completely fresh to the sport, so that probably helps her a little bit. Becca Alec has had older siblings – who have played collegiate college athletics, and Merritt Beeson's a junior, and she came here. So, I think there's a curtain maturity about this team that's unique. All right, let's move to basketball. Men's basketball. The Big Ten schedule came out. So now we know the full Nebraska men's basketball schedule for 23-24. We're not going to go over the entire Big Ten men's schedule. But I wanted to ask if you guys had any thoughts on if you saw it and any particular thoughts.
Well, the Big Ten never gives you. But they are starting with a lighter load. They didn't overdo it this year, which
Agreed.
Hurt them last year because they were trying to figure some things out early, and they had a good Sam Griesel and Derek Walker. They had good guys. It was a good team early. They couldn't. It's too much. Every game was all these different challenges. So. It's a lighter load, but the Big Ten still hits you in the mouth with the early December games. What is it, Indiana or no?
At Minnesota and home for Michigan State.
Okay,
Minnesota's winnable.
I mean, but then there comes Izzo, and you know,
that's
but
horrible.
Maybe you can get Izzo early. Maybe he doesn't have everything figured out yet. So, it's a typical Big Ten schedule. I mean, it just did. You could say, well, they have this and they have that, or they don't have this, but they have that. There's always something in the Big Ten. You can't escape. So, but I don't think they can ever escape having to play Penn State. So they always have that game. I think it's at home this year. The Big Ten loves them, some Nebraska Penn State basketball.
They do. You know, here's what's interesting is the Big Ten schedule is going to start on December 3rd, and Nebraska plays Creighton that day. So Minnesota starts their season at Ohio State, their Big Ten play, on December 3rd. Then they host Nebraska. That is their two games. I think Nebraska's got a later slot because they want that Creighton game. I'm going to rattle off what happens in December because I think it's pertinent. I fully anticipate Nebraska being, 7-0 when they play Creighton. There's a game at Oregon State. Sorry for the sound of my computer. There's a game at Oregon State or against Oregon State. In Sioux Falls, that's going to be a home game for Nebraska.
Right.
Oregon State won't have any fans there, so that I think will be a huge Nebraska advantage. I think they'll be 7-0 going into Creighton. Here then is the schedule in December. December 3rd, Creighton. December 6th at Minnesota. December 10th, Michigan State. December 17th, Kansas State. If you go 2-2 in that stretch, I think you're really thrilled, right? Can they go 2-2 in that stretch? Three great teams in Minnesota.
I don't know how good Creighton's going to be then. I know they're going to have Trey Alexander and they're going to have Kalkbrenner, and they're going to have a whole bunch of other guys who can play. But they're also going to be trying to figure things out early with some new guys at the four spot and Ashworth. What's he all about? But obviously Creighton's going to be a Sweet 16 Elite Eight team eventually by the end of the year. So I just wonder what's Kasey Tominaga going to do? I think the summer had to just elevate him a little bit with, helping lead Japan to the Olympics. That had to be good for him. I wonder what's his growth curve, coming back? And can they get him the ball? The point guard situation last year was so good. What's that going to be like this year? How many shots is Kasey going to – is he going to handle the ball? And is he going to dish off to people and maybe get shots off that? It'll be fascinating and – But there's so much about this team we don't know yet, so we're going to be learning as we go.
The other thing I would add, I agree with what you're saying, Sam. Like, I think that early December schedule is going to be really interesting. We'll kind of see what they're made of. I look at their home schedule to end the regular season as an opportunity to make some hay, too. I mean, you've got Wisconsin at home. Michigan will be tough, but you got Penn State, Minnesota, Rutgers. Those are your home games. Mm-hmm. To end the regular season, and who knows where they're going to be at that point, trying to make the the mid-level of the Big Ten tournament. Is there an NIT bid at stake at that point. I think
Rutgers
really
will be as good. Penn State will have a new coach, so we don't know what you're, that might help. But yeah, I just think the fact that you're thinking they can go 7-0. Last year they came out of the. I remember driving to the Iowa game, listening to the Oklahoma playing Oklahoma. You know, like around Thanksgiving. I mean, yeah. You don't need to be playing those kind of games that early if you're trying to build a program. So. You need to win. They need to learn how to win. So I think that alone should help them.
I agree. I think they have a chance. The January thing's hard. You know, when you look in early January, you're gonna see some challenges right away. So they January 3rd at Indiana, or they host Indiana. January 6th at Wisconsin. January 9th host Purdue. Then they go on the road to Iowa and Rutgers. Those will be five big games. You try to look at it in chunks. There's more to talk about with this team, and we'll bring in Wilson. Yeah. He has his own Half Court Press podcast with Joel Renzi. They'll talk next week about the schedule. We'll bring in Wilson, and he can kind of break down what he perceives. I agree that they've got some players. They got a lot of guys in the backcourt. They got to cross their fingers and hope Blaze Keita is healthy in the front court. Let's end with the Nebraska baseball schedule. Evan, I only took a glance at this. It feels like they're making Nebraska baseball is making itself an honorary member of the Big 12. Am I right?
Well,
they're playing a bunch of games against Big 12 teams.
Yeah, they're playing that opening weekend showdown series. I don't know how much say they had and who their opponents were for that, but yeah, they're playing Baylor and Texas Tech and Oklahoma. Tennessee's going to be there. I kind of wish they would have drawn the Vols. That would have been a fun.
Well, it would have been fun.
Would have been fun to see. I mean, who knows? Those guys, I mean, they're going to churn through.
That team's great.
Tony Vitello, baby.
Yeah, right. So you've got that.
I understand what you mean about it being fun.
It would be
electric. They beat Vanderbilt last year. I get it, but I wouldn't want to mess with Tennessee.
The two big takeaways from Nebraska baseball schedule are, one, the Big Ten home series are a lot more interesting than they were last year. You've got Iowa, Indiana, Maryland, all of which were NCAA qualifiers last year. Little nugget I put in my story, they played one game at home last year against a team that finished above 500, and that was Creighton that finished 25-24. That's how bad the home schedule was this year. They have a much better home slate this year with the Big Ten teams, like I mentioned. South Alabama should be better. Nichols was close to being an NCAA tournament team. So I start with that, and then the midweeks. And as much as Nebraska struggled in the midweek, they went 6-6. The schedule didn't help them because it was sort of a no-win situation. They were playing teams with RPIs so low that even if you win, it dings your resume. And they didn't win some of them, and so that's on Nebraska to fix. But they essentially swapped out multiple games with Omaha. South Dakota State, I think, had maybe two games. Now they have one, and they're bringing in Kansas, and they're bringing in Kansas State for an additional game. So, yeah, I think that's something that they absolutely wanted to do to boost their RPI chances to where those midweeks can actually help you as opposed to being sort of a no-lose.
Starting next year, they don't have to do this anymore, right? Because of the teams that are coming in.
Because of 2025, when you start adding USC and UCLA, sure.
I mean, that changes the conversation. Those teams are not chopped. I mean, they're not great, but Oregon, Washington, USC, and UCLA.
Oregon's better. I'm not sure USC is, though. I mean, this is a Fred Lynn USC. I mean, this is
right.
Like Nebraska will lobby hard to play all the teams on the West Coast, right?
You would think. I mean, they're going to have to. Right now, you play 8 Big Ten opponents, and you miss 4 Big Ten opponents. That's the schedule. So I think there is a push internally to say, yeah, we need to increase our conference schedule, two or three series, maybe.
The Big 12 teams is obviously a conscious effort to get more RPI in the schedule.
Absolutely.
It's hard to do in the Big Ten. I still would love to see them have a home and home, or either, you know, every other year you're home, you're away with Missouri.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Because it's drivable, and you get all the SEC RPI love from playing Missouri.
Right.
It just goes right into your RPI. Whoever Missouri plays and beats in the SEC goes right into your RPI. So, and that's a drivable game. So, I'll keep working on that. We'll see if it ever happens.
And Kansas, too. I didn't realize until I was looking at the schedule. They played Kansas one time, one single game in 2016 since they left the Big 12. That's it.
And they're going down there. The, it used to be called Quigley Field as opposed to Wrigley Field. And it's right in the shadow of Allen Fieldhouse, right behind it.
Yeah.
What I guess what I mean to say is, and we'll leave it here, Rutgers probably has no Penn State. They don't have any interest in going cross-country flights to play baseball games, especially on a Sunday. Like,
sure.
I'm guessing that their desire is, hey, let's regionalize this. We'll play each other, but we don't have any interest in going out there. And I'm guessing UCLA and Oregon and Washington, they don't have any interest in going the other way either. So, like, instead of pretending that you know, like, Rutgers needs to see Jackie Robinson Field, or they need to see the Oregon baseball stadium. Just caucus it. You know, like, have one side of the league do this and the other side of the league do this. Doesn't that make sense? Not an east and west, but it's functionally east
I
and
think
west.
That's a good point because, yeah, at some point, the travel for college baseball, if you're flying cross-country, well, you got a game two more days, yeah. And you're going to – so. I think that'll probably help.
It's going to be a 17-team league. You're going to play 16 opponents. So, yeah, you could, in theory, still play half of it, 8 of the 16.
What's the one team that doesn't have a team?
That'd be Wisconsin, yeah.
And Jackie Robinson Stadium's, like, the coolest stadium. I've never seen Sanford. But Jackie Robinson Stadium's amazing. So, like, every player should maybe see it once and go to UCLA once. But there's no reason why, like, anyone other than Nebraska and Iowa need to go out there more than once in 4 years.
And maybe by that time, college sports will figure itself out, and it'll make football its own thing and not subject all the other sports to the wonky schedule.
I love it. I don't know how that works. I don't know how they do it. But I would love to see it because Nebraska would be back in the Big 12 or the Big 8.
That would be kind of fun. I would enjoy that. That would be a return to form. We'll see. They're having NIL hearings on Congressional Hill today. So we'll see what it comes of that. Okay, it's time for the picks. This week, we've got 10 exciting games this week. Well, 9 and then Nebraska-Louisiana Tech. Tom, you're ahead of us by 5. You're 24-6, which is actually really good. Let's be honest. He's just doing really well.
It's early.
Yeah, sure.
It's early.
He's doing elite. We're at 19-11. He's at 24-6.
Trust
the
process.
Usually, this is where you're at. Is where he's at. So he's kicking our ass.
I had it. Well, speaking of kicking, I got one last week from a long kick. So.
Yes, you did. Okay, here we go. And these are all really good games, except for the last one. UCLA at Utah.
Utes.
I'm going to take Utah too. I like their team.
Is Ryzen playing?
Yeah, he played last week.
Okay.
Oregon State at Washington State. These two coaches, here's my prediction, will not be there next year. They're going to get hired by somebody else because they don't have a league to go to. And they are two great coaches.
Pac-2. Oregon State.
Where is it at?
It's in the Palouse.
I'll go Wazoo.
Wazoo? I'm going Wazoo. And I think it's because they're at home. I think Oregon State's a good team, though.
Yeah.
Oklahoma-Cincinnati. Oklahoma's done well early. Cincinnati lost last week. Oklahoma-Cincinnati.
Boomer Sooner.
Yeah, OU.
OU for Evan. OU for me. Florida State at Clemson. I'm taking Clemson. Florida State's going to have to prove it.
Florida State kind of already has proven it to me. I'm going Florida State.
Okay.
I got a hunch. Because of that first game was a real a clunker for Clemson. Everybody's writing them off.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to fight back and win.
Clemson. Colorado, Oregon.
I'd love to see Colorado hang, but I got to go Oregon.
Oregon for Evan.
Oregon, but if we were doing points, I'd take the Buffs and the points. I'm taking Oregon, though. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying.
I know.
Straight up Oregon.
I'll take Oregon, too. Iowa at Penn State.
Nittany.
If it were in Iowa City, might go the other way, Yeah, Penn State.
I'll take Penn State. Ohio State, Notre Dame. That's a good one, isn't it? I'm taking Notre Dame.
Yeah, same here, Irish.
I can't go against Ohio State. Ohio State.
Okay. I haven't seen it from Ohio State yet. Oklahoma State at Iowa State.
Ah! Somebody's got to win.
Somebody's got to win. You know what happened to Oklahoma State last week?
Sure.
I mean, they got hammered by South Alabama.
But their head coach didn't get heckled by a fan.
Iowa State, Matt Campbell, is running back to the locker room in Athens, Ohio. There's probably 9 Iowa State fans there. One of them yells at him that he's on the hot seat, and he turns around and is going to go like go after him, and he's held back by his – I'm like, what are you doing?
Yikes.
I'll take Oklahoma State. It can't be that bad, can they?
I'm going to say the same thing about Iowa State.
Oh, I'm taking Oklahoma State. I don't think Iowa State could score. Wisconsin-Purdue, at Purdue. I watched the Purdue-Syracuse game this week. Interesting game. Purdue turned it over 5 times. They're a 6-point underdog to Wisconsin. They turned it over 5 times against Syracuse. So, anyway.
This is really interesting. I don't think Wisconsin's that good yet, but Purdue is just – I'll go Badgers.
Exactly my line of thinking as well. I'm not impressed by Wisconsin, but I'm more than impressed by Purdue. So, Wisconsin.
Wisconsin has not lost to Purdue, I think, since 04. Wisconsin. And Nebraska, Louisiana Tech. Assume we're all taking Nebraska there?
Yep.
Nebraska.
Assume that might be the last time we pick Nebraska in September.
Now, wait a minute. Oh, in September.
In September. We'll see what happens next week. You never know. Michigan plays Rutgers this week. I think it'll be a 21-point spread. But Rutgers is very similar to Nebraska. Very similar. I think if those two teams are on the field, it might be 9-6. Okay, that is our podcast for this week. For Tom and Evan, I'm Sam. We'll be back next week to recap Louisiana Tech and preview Jim Harbaugh coming to town. He's back. Take care, folks.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.